Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my boy Lollipop, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, mate.
You make my heart go giddy up, Nate.
I don't really know how to respond to that.
That was why I said it. I wanted to catch you out. Okay. How are you doing, boys?
Coping, you know, making it through day by day.
Yeah, it is like that, isn't it? How about you, Bardi? You've been doing a lot of shopping.
No, I go shopping once a week. I bring Netflix. I watch Netflix while I'm in the queue, and it passes the time. I've discovered this. I've got older. I hate wackiness, and there was a guy. You know when...
I'm loving this already. This anecdote is already my favourite anecdote I've heard this week, so please crack on.
And there was just this guy who just decided like to get people G'd up, and he started doing like a Joe Wicks hit class in the queue. And he was two or three behind me, and people were cheering him on, clapping him. And by the time he got in, he was soaked with sweat, panting. And I was just thinking, if he just shook his head, he could just be sending virus all over.
Oh, God. And that's so grim.
I just hate that. I just hate wackiness. And as someone who works for charity, I'm quite often surrounded by wackiness. Yeah. Like, let's put on an orange wig, or let's put on a red nose or something like that. I just hate it. It's the worst form of comedy. So I was very thankful for Netflix to get me through that. I could ignore him as much as possible.
Was he a plant? Was he put there by the shop to kind of keep people interested? Or was he just a punter?
He was definitely a punter. I don't think you would choose to do a workout in the attire that he was wearing. He was wearing black jeans and a stripy shirt, and he had like he was old as well. He wasn't young. It was just terrible to watch.
And that's so surreal.
I just wish coronavirus would end there so we didn't have to queue outside and watch him.
That's lovely. Yeah, that's cheered me up.
Bless him for, you know, trying to get some community spirit going in desperate times.
Yeah, he was trying to do a good thing.
at least he didn't start a sing-song. Come on, let's have a sing-song.
Yeah, that was definitely the alternative.
I know Windy hates people singing happy birthday, but I just hate random sing-alongs or the clapping for the NHS is good and I like it, but I still feel like a bit of a lemon doing it, so I'm backing away from it now and allowing my wife to take control of the clapping and everything.
You've gone full Victor Meldrew, haven't you, Bardi, in the lockdown?
No, I'm full of a lot of joy, and I'm dealing with the whole lockdown thing pretty well. I'm enjoying my running more than ever, so I'm dealing with everything pretty well. But I just hate wackiness. That's what I've learned.
Good. I had a bit of a dip last week, and I was just saying to you guys, I think it coincided with buying Football Manager 2020. I've not played Football Manager for, gosh, at least 10 years, probably more. And I thought, okay, well, I've got a lot of time to go over Easter. I'm off work for a week. I'm going to buy Football Manager 2020. I'm going to teach myself how to play this new version of the game. Basically, I ended up two or three days straight just playing the game nonstop. And by the end of the day, by the end of each day, I was just thinking, like, what am I doing with my life, with my time? I've got all this free time and I've got all these things I want to achieve. And I've just spent that time getting through pre-season with Spurs. Like, that was a day. Pre-season was a day. And then the next 2 days, we're getting to the Christmas period and I'm achieving nothing. So I decided then that I had to ration the way that I use Football Manager. So now I'm playing like a maximum of 3 hours a day, broken up into like 1 hour stints. And I like to achieve something now every day. I've decided that I want to be able to tick something off every single day that we're in this lockdown period, because it makes me feel better about not being able to go out and do things outside. So yeah, I'm back in the game now. I feel good. But Football Manager, yeah, it brought me down big time. We've got a few things to talk about today. We've got to talk about Spurs' response to the furloughing saga, which is ultimately a very positive one. We've got loads of questions, one of which is on youth players, so I'll go into some detail there. And one is about how we rate our players so far this season, so far in inverted commas, I suppose. So that'll that's going to create some talking points as well, I think. But we'll start off with the furlough backtrack, as I would call it. This was... I would say this is quite a shocking U-turn by Spurs. Nathan, were you surprised that this statement was put out and in the way it was?
Yeah, I was surprised. I wasn't like completely, totally shocked. It wasn't beyond reason, especially like if you look at what a couple of other football clubs had done in their reaction. And I do think like the trust and the fans as well had done a good job of it, making their feelings pretty heard. And apparently also the players had a significant impact on this decision, which maybe that was sort of, you know, that was the real impact there. But yeah, no, still pretty surprising given sort of the circumstances, given that a few other clubs are also furloughing, given what we know about the way Daniel Levy operates the club. But, you know, a positive one. What I said before, I stand by, which is that the furloughing for me is not the issue. All I care about is that everyone is paid what they were paid before. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening now. That for me is the main news, and I'm very pleased that these people are being paid the amount that they need to survive on, that enables them to stay home, stay fed, stay clothed, etc. Whether or not we're using the job retention scheme for me is sort of by the by.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think you're right to point out that the Trust deserve a huge amount of credit for campaigning against the club's decision to furlough staff. I think they did a remarkable piece of work with the statement in particular.
As they often do,
it's completely thankless. They are terrific people who give up their own time for the benefit of Tottenham Hotspur supporters. And I genuinely think that no one should have the right to criticise the Trust, quite frankly, because if you think you can do better, give it a go. See what you can do. They are just fantastic. And this turnaround is so un-Levy-like. That's the thing that shocked me. Yeah. He is the kind of man who normally doubles down in such situation. And he's done the right thing. And I think the statement was great. And they actually went one step further than this sort of U-turn on the furloughing. They've opened up the stadium for COVID-19 testing and swabbing for NHS staff and families.
Oh, there's more than that. They are converting a section of the stadium to a women's outpatients hospital.
Amazing. Really amazing. I mean, that is what you want to see from your football club. Yeah. That is true community spirit.
Yeah.
Bardi, Levy says in his statement that it was never their intention to do anything other than put measures in place to protect jobs whilst the club sought to continue to operate in a self-sufficient manner. Do you, cynically, do you believe that? Do you think that Levy is now saying these as sort of weasel words to get out of the situation he put the club in? Or do you think he genuinely just had the best interests of everyone at heart from the start and just went about it slightly the wrong way?
I mean, I'm pretty sure the club were still going to do the COVID-19 testing and open the stadium up. I don't think they've done that as a reaction of how people took the way they were going to use the furlough. I think the club was probably going to always do that. Unfortunately, now it does look like they've done it because they got told off and people got upset. My stance remains the same. It's great that the club have done what they've done. Mm. But I was never going at them for their decision in the first place, because Daniel Levy made a business decision and these are strange times. So I'm glad the club have turned around, but it does doesn't really affect my position. I think there's still bigger criminals out there who are misusing this and everything else. But now Spurs have done this. Perhaps the rest of the Spurs community can now start looking at the other guys who are claiming money, British Airways, Amazon, all this kind of stuff.
That's a really good point. That's a really, really good point. We've mobilised this group of people who were staunchly against what the club were doing, who were just replying to every tweet with pay your staff.
Mm.
Those people who are doing that, do the same to other big companies who are not paying staff or furloughing staff unnecessarily. Why not? Great point, Bardi. I love that. We got so many questions on Twitter, and some of them are from last week, actually, which we didn't get round to. This one I really thought was good. Seamus Hart, he said, we often hear about players that are amazing in training but don't perform in actual games. Might we see players now who are behind closed doors specialists?
What a question.
I love that. I thought that was great. So, I mean, this is the premise is that football will return in some form and will complete the season behind closed doors. I mean, there will be players out there who are affected by playing in front of a stadium full of angry, aggressive, passionate fans who find that intimidating. What do you make of this concept, Bardi, that there might be some players who are specialists in this new environment, potential new environment?
I was watching Disney Plus, and this is just
excellent answer to this question already.
So this is where my analytics is going to take us. And I was watching The Mighty Ducks, which is a great trilogy, which is not often spoken about when it comes to trilogies. And in episode one, there's this one guy who can smack the puck really hard, but he only scores 1 in 5. But that's okay because he scores 1 in 5 and it's not a problem. So when you can relate this to football. So when I'm in training, Tottenham are practicing attacking drills, and I will get the opportunity to do a drill 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. We're playing short, small teams doing stuff. And you keep repeating the same action, and there are people who will be amazing because they get the opportunity to repeat that action. But in a football match, it's very unlikely you get the same set of scenarios happen more than once. This is what makes the great players the best, is because they can do it. I don't think if Moussa Sissoko in training or Oliver Skip can repeat something continually in training, I don't think the fact that he then goes to a football match where there's no crowd and he's able to replicate that, I don't think that's possible, because football is not designed that way. There's another 21 players on the pitch all affecting the variables. So I don't think we're going to see a player who's been rubbish in a football match situation but has been great in training all of a sudden break out and have an incredible run because Bob in row one isn't throwing his watsits at him.
That's great stuff. I love the Mighty Ducks reference as well, Bardi. great movie franchise. If you enjoyed what Bardi just said there about solving problems, then I recommend you go back and listen to my chat with Harry Brooks, who talks very much on all those kind of issues regarding coaching. Really interesting listen.
Good episode.
Harry's great. He's so knowledgeable. He's just a joy to listen to talk about coaching. I agree with what you said, Bardi. However, I do think there's some potential that we might see, and I'm thinking of someone like Ryan Sessegnon, who so far has been a little shy, and it's felt like he's been a bit overawed by atmospheres or fan expectation. And I wonder whether removing that fan expectation, or the, you know, there'll still be fan expectation, but the immediacy of that, I wonder whether that might help him. What do you think, Nathan?
Yeah, definitely. I think Sessegnon's a great example there. We do hear about these stories about players who are amazing in training but can't get it together on the pitch a lot.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to verify that because obviously football is trained behind closed doors. However, my second sport, mixed martial arts, is competed much more out in the open at public gyms and all over the world in gyms that hosts the best mixed martial artists in the world. There are blokes who are full-time accountants but are absolute wizards on the mat and are out grappling professional world ranked martial artists, but they don't compete professionally because either they aren't happy getting the head trauma, or they're sort of scared at competing at that kind of level, or they just get stage fright. Maybe they had a short career and they dramatically underperformed because they can't handle the pressure. Now, I do think that the crowd plays a very significant part in that, but I don't think simply removing the crowds suddenly means that the tension is gone, because you still have the high level of competitive element. But first, I definitely, absolutely accept the idea that there are football players all over the world who are much, much better in training and suddenly drop off in a competitive environment because of the mental and emotional pressure. I'm less convinced that that will be resolved by a lack of in-stadium fans.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think... Sessegnon is a young man, but he's been playing in front of crowds all his life, and I think the problems he has now is a combination of injuries, is his faith almost in himself, and I don't think it's the crowd that forces him to turn back or not attack the man. I think it's a lack of faith in himself, and that's the problem. Removing all our fans, I don't think is going to change that. But then definitely there are such things, as Nathan said, stage fright. People do crumble. There might be you might be a fabulous singer, but as soon as you see a crowd, you could go to shit. Mm.
Yeah, so much of sport is played in the head, as they say, and it's hard to get beyond that point. Great question, Seamus. Love that. Lars Apel, or Apple, I think it's Apel, he says, if the season is finished with many games over a short period of time in June, should we adapt the way we play to cope, and how? For example, no press and a low block. So he's talking about lots of games in quick succession. I suppose the plus side is that we will have players back from injury, players like Kane and Son and Sissoko, which give us more option for rotation if we truly believe that Mourinho will rotate. What do you think, Bardi?
I don't know, because it's the same now across the board. It's not like we're travelling across Europe coming back to play Brighton, who haven't gone anywhere for 7 days. Everybody will be in the same situation and we'll all be playing games. It will perhaps revert to maybe tournament style football, where we do see a drop off in pressing as people try and manage games a bit better. I think maybe we'll see games being managed better, but I'm not sure it's going to have a dramatic effect on the players. The players have had 5 weeks of rest time. They should be going into this pretty fresh.
And that's been seen as Mourinho's forte over the years, hasn't it? And taking each game as a one-off, as a cup final, being able to plan to just get through that one game with a victory, sort of more short-termist thinking. What do you think, Nathan?
Yeah, so something we talked about before is that making the comparison between Mourinho and Pochettino, and Pochettino wants to push his players to the absolute maximum all the time and get the most out of them. And as a result, that requires greater rotation. So we've sort of seen the trend where under Pochettino, the fullbacks almost never played sort of twice in a week.
Yeah.
Whereas it's lower intensity under Mourinho. He's not trying to maximise them. He's trying to keep them fresh all through the season so that he can keep playing that same 11 over and over and over again, because they're not, absolutely sprinting their brains out for 90 minutes. And so I think probably that Mourinho style would be better suited to a super compact schedule where there's still some rotation, but less. If we're getting to a situation where we're looking at sort of 3 game weeks over and over again, you've got to like lower the intensity so that you can increase the volume.
God, imagine 3 games in a week right now. I don't think I'd be able to contain myself after this gap of no football. My Twitter feed is going to be lit. Let's put it that way.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So we've been talking about the return of football. On the other hand, there's the possibility of a non-return. So Jace Tucker says, rate the players so far this season if it stops right now. So what we've done is we've gone through and we've all put a rating against each of our players, and there's some differences. So we're going to talk through those differences. What I did was I listed them in order of the number of minutes they've played. And I don't really know why I did that. I guess because it was partly of interest. So we'll go through them in order. Toby Alderweireld, I said that that Toby was a 6. Bardi agreed. Nathan gave him 7.
I would have gone 7.5 if you'd already have exampled a I'm slightly leaning towards an 8. I think Alderweireld has had a good season.
I think Nathan makes it. I mean, he hasn't made a point, but just him saying that all of a sudden makes me think perhaps 6 is a bit harsh, and maybe the way I've perceived him has had more to do with who's been alongside him, perhaps.
Yeah, I think our defending as a football club has been poor this season, but I think Alderweireld is definitely not as good as he was last season. But I think that if we didn't have Alderweireld this season, my goodness.
Oh, God, yeah, you're so right there. No, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. And I think there are lots of mitigating factors, you know, having your centre-back partner changing regularly, going from a back 4 to a back 3 regularly, not having a solid defensive midfielder in front of him, not having any kind of continuity in front of him, having Gazzaniga for large periods, who's totally different to Lloris as a goalkeeper. They're all mitigating factors, but I don't think I can say demonstrably that Alderweireld has been good. I think he's been okay. He's one of my favourite ever Spurs defenders. I mean, I actually think he's, people hate me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, I actually think he's our best defender of the modern era, and I include Ledley King in that, who's one of my favourite Spurs players of all time. I think Alderweireld at his peak is just a stunningly good defender, and I think the drop-off's been significant, but as I said, there are lots of mitigating factors. I would love for him to re-find his peak form just for one last season next year before I think he inevitably declined. I wasn't expecting that to be a talking point, but that's interesting. This one definitely will be a talking point. Serge Aurier, who's played the second highest number of minutes in the squad, which is quite a surprise to me. I rated him as 5. Bardi gave him a 6. Nathan gave him a 4.
Yeah.
Go on, Bardi, make the case for the 6 for Aurier.
Of course, I understand why you guys are giving 5s and 4s, but I think for a short period of time, he became our main attacking outlet. Whether that's a good thing is different. It's not for discussion right now. I'm saying he was given a role to perform, and for the most part, I think the amount of assists and the amount of bad and good crosses he chucked in the box and the goals he's contributed, I think deserves more than a 4. It's not his fault. He's been given this role. He's a limited footballer, but I think he's done all right with it.
I think it's certainly true that Mourinho absolutely got the best out of Aurier for a period. Nathan, why did you rate him 4?
The fact that we've become reliant on him isn't necessarily, or I don't think, a reflection of his ability. I think that, if you sort of go back maybe a season and you say, look at Serge Aurier, he's definitely got this talent. I think if he was to get a run of games, he'd show us his ability in the final third. And he's had those run of games and he's sort of been all right in the final third and still given away horrific fouls in his own box as well.
Was it you who posted that video on Twitter the other day of some of the goals we've conceded?
Yeah, I was about to bring that up for Alderweireld. So there's this video where someone's put together like all our worst defensive mistakes of the season and put a horrific song over the top. And it's like, it's in this clip, continually, the ball is like sent over the top of our defence with no pressure on the pass. Dribblers are left free to run at our centre-backs. The midfield is just continually completely out of sight as the defence are outnumbered like 6-4. And then all of the replies are, oh, we need a new defence. Oh, our centre-backs are crap. Oh, Alderweireld's fallen off completely. And it's like, look at what is happening. Look at the state of the midfield. Look at the state of our pressing. And yes, also, Serge Aurier is just flying in recklessly 20 times a season.
This is it. It was insane to me. Like, I was watching that and I'd forgotten how many glaring errors he'd made. And it was not just the kind of the bad decisions in his own box. It's where he's like misjudged headers or gone flying into a tackle on halfway and let his man get... I mean, he's just a really bad defender. But I do take Bardi's point that he was put into a position to deliver crosses, and he actually did for a period deliver some really, really good crosses and got a good number of assists.
Yep, I gave him 4 points for those crosses, and then he had no other elements to make up the rest.
So we move on to Davinson. We've given him sevens, Bardi and I. Nathan, five.
Yeah. I don't think he... I think
after our Alderweireld discussion, I think I should revise that down to six to match Alderweireld, because he's definitely not been better than Toby.
I mean, yeah. I mean, definitely not. Okay. I like Devon Sanchez. I think he gets a lot of critique that's unfair, but I just think he's had a very poor season, which I don't want to write him off with. I just think that, like, it's not been a season for him to remember.
I disagree. In fact, Bardi, I'll let you make the case.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with whatever was just about to come out of your mouth. I think he has. I think you were going to say he's stepped up at moments. He seems to have composed himself a bit. And yeah, perhaps I should have done this more in line with Toby. But I think in the last few weeks, apart from the odd game here and there where he comes up against a massive massive striker, I think he's looked pretty good. And I think he was starting to rediscover some of that form that he saw when he first joined us.
I agree. I think he had a couple of games where he did look really rocky and he made mistakes. And he is still quite error prone, which is concerning because he's 23 now. So he's not like this young prospect. He's actually at an age where you'd hope as a centre-back is developing consistency. And I don't think he has become consistent yet, but there's a lot to like in his game. And I agree with Bardi that he's had some good moments, and at times he did hold a defence together once Mourinho came in. Dele, we've all given six. We've spoken a lot about Dele in this podcast, so we'll gloss over that one. Lucas, we've given fours and fives. I don't think we need to say more about Lucas because, again, we've covered him off a lot. Winks, sixes and fives. Son, we've all given seven. Which some people might be surprised at. I know Son definitely had a form dip, but he's contributed with goals and assists throughout the season in a team which wasn't creating a great deal, so I think that seems fair. Gazzaniga. Okay, so Nathan and I have given charitable fives to Gazzaniga. Bardi's given him a three.
He's awful. I gave him three because 1.5 because he looks nice, and then 1.5 because he's not a total twit with his feet. So, but I mean, I just as I was waiting for it to come, I was thinking Gazzaniga was the United away where he completely handed the initiative. United are a pure counter-attacking team under Solskjaer. Hands initiative to United with getting beat by a speculative shot at his near post. Chelsea at home where he just does the most ridiculous challenge on Marcos Alonso. I don't know. First of all, why you go with your feet? Second of all, what are you doing there? He's terrible from corners. He's very reactive. He'll stay on his line and try to pull off a save instead of trying to come for a corner and relieving the pressure. He's awful from distance. He gets beat down low all the time. And I understand he's a substitute goalkeeper for a reason, but I strongly and really, really believe we need to find a young goalkeeper who has all the kind of traits that we need going forward and give him the minutes that Gazzaniga would see in the cups and stuff. And yeah, I have a real passion at the moment to talk about Tottenham goalkeepers. I'd like to do this more because I'm really annoyed with them currently.
Nathan, any pushback from you on that one?
I didn't think he'd been that bad. I like his feet. I like his face. Yeah, man, you know, like, he's obviously not been good, but he's had to like fill in half a season with Lloris out injured, and he gave us something else with his kicking. And I didn't think his shot stopping was like abominable. So, like,
I will agree that the Alonso challenge was one of the worst bits of it. When I first saw that, I didn't quite realise how bad it was, but on repeated viewings, it is horrendous.
Wait, murdered that dude.
Horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, it shows the state of Tottenham's goalkeepers when actually that wasn't even the worst bit of goalkeeping we saw this season. It's probably third. There was Michel Vorm against Norwich, which was the worst. But actually, the very, very worst, and it was so bad, he deserved to get injured from it. Was Lloris against Brighton.
That was karma.
Karma, immediate karma. Because
karma for the mistake and for the drink driving.
Awful goalkeeping. That's how bad our goalkeepers are. When Vorm, Gazzaniga nearly killing somebody is only third.
He deserved to dislocate his elbow. That's not really a number-based rating, is it?
No, not at all, sorry.
Love it. Okay, Harry Kane, we've given sevens and sixes. I don't think it needs a great deal of discussion. Vertonghen, and I feel sad about Vertonghen this season. So we've given 3, 4, and 5. I'm in the middle of you two. Bardi, why have you given Vertonghen a 3?
More because it's kind of sad watching Vertonghen play now. And I think we need to stop. He should just retire now or just move to another club, another league. Because it's just heartbreaking watching a really good defender fall apart like this.
Nathan, you were a little bit more charitable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel similarly to Bardi. I guess maybe for that same reason, I've sort of given him a nostalgia boost. But I do also like refer to the mitigating circumstances that we talked about with Sanchez and Alderweireld.
Yeah, that's fair. Sissoko, we've given 5s and a 6. Dyer, 4 and 2 5s. Ericsson, I gave 4. Nathan gave 6. Bardi gave 1.
Mostly because it's perhaps not Ericsson, but it's everything else that has surrounded Ericsson this season. And I think the whole Ericsson saga affected the team. I think it stopped us from being able to like transition a little bit from losing the Champions League final into the start of the season. I don't think it helped Pochettino well. It cost us a great deal of money, and it just stopped us from being able to move on, and it stopped Pochettino from getting £30-35 million, which might have gone towards, I don't know, like a Bruno Fernandes or someone like that. And I think it cost us probably 6 months of progress by just persisting with Ericsson and learning nothing and achieving nothing.
Do you know what though? I appreciate exactly what you just said. Like, I agree with what you're saying, but I firmly place the blame on Pochettino and Levy for how the Ericsson situation panned out. I really think Pochettino, he sat on that one far too long. He was never going to convince Ericsson to sign the thing. And I thought Ericsson, although he didn't play particularly well, I thought he handled himself with a degree of class. He didn't moan about being on the subs bench. He came on and he tried. There were a couple of games where he came on and influenced the game even. And we've seen players, you know, essentially go on strike to force a move through. There was no signs of that with Ericsson. He was respectful. He needed a new challenge. He didn't make a secret of it. But I really love Ericsson. If he were to come back and play for Inter or whoever at White Hart Lane, I would love to see him get a great ovation, because he was a magnificent servant for Spurs for many, many years. Nathan, Ericsson, 6 for you.
6, yeah. He played like crap when he started games, but he won games when he came off the bench repeatedly in a series. Like, yeah, I completely accept Bardi's feelings over the way things ended. I think it's really awful the way things ended between Ericsson and Tottenham. But with that out of mind, he won us, like, I don't know, 15 points this season. And this season, that's a hell of a lot of points for us.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I think Ericsson will become, like, in 2 years' time, when we think about Ericsson, we will look at Ericsson like how we look at Berbatov now. We will realise that they were fantastic players and they did great things for Tottenham. It's just sad the way it ended. But, in a few years' time, we'll remember him fondly again. And as you said, if he comes back to play at Spurs next season or the season after, I'll give him a clap. He deserved that. He's been a great player for us and a good servant. And he did leave. You're right. He didn't kick up a fuss and stayed. And he was professional, at least.
Great song too. Really good song. Hugo Lloris. So I've the 5s and 6s across the board, which is, I think, about right. Lo Celso. So I've given Lo Celso an 8. I actually think if the season were to end now, Lo Celso is my player of the season for Spurs. Bardi's given a 7. Nathan's also given an 8. Bardi, is he your player of the season?
Yeah, I think so. Him and Son. I went 7 just because I don't think anybody deserves an 8. I don't think anybody's been. Yeah, so he gets 7. He's only played a small amount of games. It's great. I'm very hopeful for what he can bring to us in the future.
I think I gave the 8 because it's his first season in a new country. He's adapted pretty quickly. He was injured at the start. And he is, for me, our most influential player at this point. The argument, Nathan, is that he doesn't score enough or assist enough. But I see it that it's a bit like Modric in a way, that he's doing a lot of stuff that won't get recognised in those statistics. What do you think?
I reject the talking points of discussing his goals and assists.
Fair. Okay. Lamella, 6 and 5s. It started really promisingly for Lamella this season. He had a great start to the campaign and then injury struck once again. Tongi. Tongi and Ndombele. 1,300 minutes, or a shade under 1,400 minutes, which is not what we expected this season. I thought he'd be a mainstay in the team. I've given a 6, but it's pretty charitable, I must say. Bardi, you've also given a 6. Nathan, a 4. Nathan, you must be pretty disappointed with how it's panned out so far.
I'm so disappointed because my excitement for this player was enormous. I stand by that excitement because we can see the talent on this player. Should we talk about dentistry? So the recent news is that, so the 4 that I've given Ndombele isn't just for Ndombele. He obviously, I'm sure, shoulders some blame, but I'm giving the product of Ndombele by Tottenham Hotspur a 4 out of 10 for this season.
Yeah.
So there's been recent news that one of the significant factors this season is that he has had dental issues, which the club have failed to pick up on and enact on. And of course, that makes for a fantastic headline because it's, you know, Ndombele blames his teeth for playing badly. But there is a long history, well-studied history of athletes suffering from groin and spine injuries based on dental issues. It completely affects you all the way down the center of your body. I think Gerrard and Cesc Fabregas, I'm forgetting others, but have all missed entire seasons with dental issues.
Nathan has brought up the old story about AC Milan before they would sign a player would check out their teeth. And Sissoko, the French left back, they tried to sign about 10 years ago now. They didn't because they opened up his mouth like a horse. They looked in, they checked his teeth. And because you're right, teeth are, your dental hygiene can tell you a lot about how your body's working and everything else like that. And he ended up at Aston Villa. And there you go. Do check, brush your teeth, kids.
I feel like I've woken up in an alternative reality here. I've not seen this story. How have I missed this? I completely missed the story about his dental work, and I had no idea about the impact of dentistry on other aspects of the body. Do you know any background in that, Nathan? Do you understand the science behind it?
It will be a nerve-related thing.
Right, okay.
That's all I've got.
Interesting. Yeah, I need to read up on this. I had no idea.
But I mean, if whenever you're in some kind of pain, that's going to throw you off anyway.
And tooth pain is horrendous.
It's the worst.
It really, dude. I've had issues with wisdom teeth before, and it is like when you've got toothache, it's hard to think of anything else. It's just like it's there. It's in your head, and it's just like a throbbing pain. It's awful. So I can totally appreciate that would be a distraction for him. Yeah, that's really interesting. Danny Rose, and I guess this is a similar conversation to some of those we've had already, but so I gave 3, Bardi gave 1 again, Nathan gave 3. My 3 was very charitable. I thought Rose was really poor when he played this year. Bardi, you obviously thought the same.
Yeah, exactly the same. His off-field comments didn't help, and I just couldn't be bothered giving out 3s and 4s. So I just thought, if you're bad, you're getting a 1. So there you go, Danny. I know it's hard for me because I love Danny Rose, and I think I started this season with a little monologue about how Danny Rose is the perfect example of Tottenham. I think if you go back through the episodes, you'll find me.
Well, he still is, to be fair.
Yeah, but he did buy a load of pizzas for NHS work.
I was just about to say that. That was so lovely.
Yeah.
There have been a few charitable gestures by Rose, and I commented on them, and someone came back with, it's just like a week's wages. And I'm like, okay, well, have you given a week's wages to help people in the NHS? I thought that was a fantastic gesture. Regardless of whether it's a PR move or whatever, it was a lovely thing to do, and I thought Rose was great in doing that. Disappointing performances. He's just not the player he was, frankly.
Nope.
Ben Davis, 5s and 6s. Ben Davis became better while he was injured. Japhet Tanganga, who's played nearly 1,000 minutes, and we'll talk about him in a bit more detail shortly. 7s from Bardi and I, 6 from Nathan. I think, it's difficult to argue with either of those scores. Very pleased to see Tanganga get some game time. Sessegnon, now we've got a bit of divergence here. So I said 6, Bardi said 4, Nathan said 5. Again, I was basing the 6 on expectations. So I think it would have been silly to expect so too much from Sessegnon too soon because he was coming back from a long injury. He's in a new team, he's a young man, and he doesn't doesn't quite know his best position yet, but he got a Champions League goal, he got an assist on his debut. I think there have been some signs from him, although there have been some disappointing performances too. I guess we can all agree that we expect next season to be a big one for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Cool. And Bergwijn started with a bang. And I think the fact that he then had to play every game until he got injured was bad and didn't help him adjust. But he looks as a supremely talented player. And I think there's a lot to come from him next year. So very excited about that signing. The last one that I rated was Walker Peters, who only had 422 minutes. Very mixed showings from Walker Peters. But I think that's kind of what you expect when a manager clearly doesn't have faith in you. Bardi, you gave him a one.
Yeah, just a one. I'm glad he's moved on and the conversation has changed. It's very sad what's happened to him. He could have been great. He wasn't. And that's that.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.